Like so much of America during the mid-1980s, I was so impressed with this guy. Every Thursday night, he and his TV family entertained, mesmerized us. I was taken with his sense of humor. He seemed like an incredible father, an amazing, influential individual. I was wowed. I was impressed. Friday morning at school, every week, there would be all this chatter about the show from the night before, and we would replay scenes together, laughing, telling the events that took place. And then, a little over a decade ago, all of us moved from being impressed to instead shaking our heads and going, oh, whoa, oh, wow, how does this happen? And suddenly I like so many of you, moved from being impressed with Cosby and with all that had transpired in that era to instead just going, oh, oh, wow, and just shaking my head. And of course, it's back in the news this week with being released on a technicality, and it was just stunning. To have originally held someone in high regard as being a person of influence, and yes, power, and yes, winsome sense of humor, and all kinds of captivation about that individual, to then suddenly just shaking our heads going, oh my goodness, the level of duplicity, the level of power gone crazy and out of control, and actually dreadfully, sinfully harming other people. Wow. If you can identify at all with my own feelings in the midst of that, then you're going to benefit and identify with our new series starting today and leading up through mid-September. You're going to be able to identify. And I want to invite you right at the outset to, inside, deep in your own heart and mind, answer at these responses. Which of these are true for your story, your family or friends in this last decade? Which of these are true for you? Deep inside. You don't have to tell anybody else. You don't have to raise your hand. Just deep inside. You faced a challenging situation for which you felt unprepared. Is that true of you? Or you felt like the odds were stacked against you by powerful people. Maybe in your community or in your workplace, you felt like the odds were stacked against you. If that was true for you, you're going to get a lot out of this series. Was it true for you that you felt stuck in an overwhelming, dismal situation? Or maybe you were surrounded by egomaniacs and narcissists and corrupt and self-indulgent people, and you didn't realize it at first, and then suddenly your eyes were wide open and you realized it. Or maybe you experienced vengeful enemies along your path, and you needed courage, but you also had deep down this thirst for revenge, but somehow, and yet you knew you couldn't get that revenge, but somehow you wanted it. Or maybe for you, your season and circumstances during this past decade at some point have felt godless. Maybe even like God wasn't there and didn't care. Have you had a season like that? Answer deep within your heart. I know I have. I've had seasons where it's like, I don't. Wow, God, are you there and do you care? If any of these situations have been true for you, then you'll get so much out of this summer series. Esther, Mordecai, and God's people faced all these feelings and more. For starters today, opening scene of the story, I invite you there, Esther chapter 1, opening scene of the story is designed to pull you in, impress you, and make you shake your head a lot. In many ways, like so many of us have done related to the Cosby situation. Esther 1:1-2 says, this is what happened during the time of Xerxes. The Xerxes, who ruled over 127 provinces stretching from India to Kush, at that time, King Xerxes reigned from his royal throne in the citadel of Susa. Many people have some familiarity with Esther's story. It's been the stuff of novels, screenplays, and even grand stage productions locally. A beautiful young woman is stunningly selected to be queen over the Persian Empire. Unbeknown to King Xerxes, she's of Jewish descent. A serious threat arises against her people, and she's instrumental in their rescue. A big celebratory party happens, the Feast of Purim, a regular Jewish festival that gets enacted for the centuries to come. This big celebratory party, this Feast of Purim, is the result, and Esther proves to be an amazing person of courage and influence. And yes, this is a motivating story indeed. For such a time as this, for such a time as this is inspiring. But there's so much more to the story. So much more to the story. You're likely not as familiar with Esther's backstory. So let's consider Esther's backstory for a few moments. Right here is where verses 1 and 2 set the stage. During the time, at this time. What time? Xerxes reigned over the Persian Empire, modern-day Iran, from approximately 486 to 465 B.C. Xerxes was the son of Darius I. Xerxes' Hebrew name is Ahasuerus. So it may be that in your copy of the Bible that you have open in your app or open in front of you there in your hard copy, maybe that it says Ahasuerus, Xerxes, same ruling dude. Okay, it's the same time when Greek culture was flourishing. It was the time of Socrates, Pericles, and Pythagoras. Herodotus, a Greek writer of that era, was very impressed with Xerxes and described him as tall, handsome, an ambitious warrior and ruler. In fact, eventually, Xerxes actually lost in battle to the Greeks. The biblical text's lead description, did you catch it? The lead description is how he ruled over 127 provinces stretching across the empire. Now, everything here is ostentatious, deliberately huge. Everything. There were other ways of relating the number of regions that he ruled over. The most specific, largest number is chosen with the aim of hyperbolically impressing us. Get ready. Over the top happens a lot in this story. Verse two, in those days, at that time, Xerxes reigned. There's a pileup of royal words. Kingly language is dominant. Ruled, reigned, king, kingdom, royal. All of these words across these opening nine verses have the same ancient Hebrew root. And they're planted in the outset of this story to convey a very impressive message. Dominance, power, ego. Xerxes is powerfully controlling, and people are vulnerable. He's ruling from the citadel of Susa. It's actually the high ground at the center of the city. Susa. Verse 3, and in the third year of his reign, He gave a banquet for all his nobles and officials, the military leaders of Persia and Media, so all the power people are coming together. The princes and the nobles of the provinces were present. This lets us know Xerxes is happily reigning. Some of the people he's controlling include a remnant of exiled Jews still in the Eastern Persian Empire. Though some of God's people returned to Jerusalem, the capital city of Israel, 50 to 60 years prior to this, some are still stuck in exile. The devotion of this group, the devotion of God's people to the Lord their God, to Yahweh, and their worship practices would have conflicted with Xerxes. See, as the mighty king, he built a palace at a place called Persepolis. A palace in honor of himself and the Zoroastrian god Ahura Mazda. And consequently, there would have been conflicting values of customs and worship, a grand clash of kingdoms. And what happens here in verse 3 was likely after Xerxes' campaign in Egypt and Babylon, a grand campaign that is noted in other historical records. And here is a banquet, a grand feast of celebration and showing off. That's Xerxes' goal, showing off. This business of banquets is a recurring story motif all across Esther's story. We're going to see it in the coming weeks, again and again. Oh, let's throw a banquet. Oh, let's throw another party. Oh, let's have another feast. All across the story. And the same is true with surprising twists, reversals, turns of the table, turns of fortune for people. Get ready to be surprised again and again, just like the firsthand people in the old story. And so we're going to see heroes and villains and twists and turns and surprises and revenge. Here in Esther chapter 1, we gain great description of the scenes for this extended feast. It says, for a full 180 days, he, that is Xerxes, displayed the vast wealth of his kingdom. Again, he's out to impress. He's out to show off. So he displays the vast wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and glory of his majesty. And again, pile up of king lingo, kingly language. When these days were over, the king gave a banquet lasting 7 days. So in other words, there's this great, big, long, extended feast for months, and then there's this special seven-day feast, seven-day banquet. In the enclosed garden, now note this, in the enclosed garden of the king's palace, for all the people, from the least to the greatest, who were in the citadel of Susa. The garden had hangings of white and blue linen fastened with cords of white linen and purple material to silver rings on marble pillars. There were couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and other costly stones. Wow. Are you impressed? Well, what's the most luxurious place you've ever laid your eyes on? What is it? For me, it has to be in Dubai 2 years ago. I was there to share training with some global mission partners, and I was able to tour while there a previous king's grand hotel. Now, I literally stood in the foyer and put my camera up in the air and just snapped this picture. This does not begin to do justice to the glitz, the glamour, you talk about out to impress. This was a previous king who had built this luxurious place. Some friends and I went into the men's room, and in the men's room, we started looking around and realized the whole thing was just built of marble and gold and brass and bronze, and I quickly concluded that the men's room was probably worth 3 to 4 times the value of my house. I'm serious. It was all decked out. And while there, we also got to tour the Grand Mosque. Grand Mosque, which was totally meant to impress. I mean, this is carpet here in the middle. I mean, like, it was the biggest, biggest Persian-style carpet I've ever seen. I mean, it's just crazy. And all these walls are decked out with all the just markings and tapestry. It was incredible. Just left me going, wow. And honestly, kind of chuckling to myself. Because obviously somebody was aiming to show up. I also spent a couple hours last week. Our family was gone to Chicagoland to be there with my son and daughter-in-law as they got married, wedding 2.0. They did the COVID wedding last year in the backyard with a dozen people. And this was, you know, the upgrade, 2.0. We got them upgraded. This was a big party for extended family and friends. And while there, the one morning, my sister and brother-in-law, well, they are from Georgia, and they love to go to estate sales. Anybody else ever go to an estate sale? Know what I'm talking about? Okay, so this one happened to be there on the edge of Chicago, and it was in a house that was 30,000 square feet. Yeah. Can you say wow? I mean, this was like, and this was a relatively newer home, and in the center of this 30,000 square foot complex was a swimming pool. We're not talking a kiddie pool. We're not talking any kind of pool that any of us might dare to dream of having in our backyard. This was like the ultimate dream pool. I mean, this thing was huge and rock work and stonework all around it, and all the rest of the house was wrapped around it with windows looking out onto the pool. So if you've got friends over and they're in your dining room, what are you aiming to do? Show off your pool. Their little pool. And I'm just walking around. We were there for a couple of hours, and my sister and brother-in-law grabbing up stuff to sell on eBay, and I just couldn't help but chuckle because I'm thinking to myself, okay, they built this whole thing to impress, and now dozens of us, hundreds of us are walking around their house, you know, picking out their old stuff, you know, and pointing it out. It was impressive indeed. And the aim back in Esther 1 is to impress. It's to impress. It's extravagance. Don't miss the extravagant, colorful hangings in the garden. Yes, there's a grand garden. Probably planted in the story to make us think of Eden. Yes, the old, old Garden of Eden. Only this is Xerxes' garden. And with Xerxes' garden, it's over the top with hangings and cords and pillars all woven into the garden. And we're supposed to be impressed. And chuckle a bit, like I did at the estate sale and like I did in Dubai. In case you haven't caught on yet, the big aim here in Esther chapter 1 is to impress you with this deep concept. You ready? Here's the deep concept. It's all about Xerxes. It's all about Xerxes, the opulence, absolute luxury. Did you catch that the floors had precious gems poured into them? In our house, we're just happy if we can keep dog fur vacuumed up off the floor. This place is full of gems poured into the floor. It's impressive, crazy. Verses 7 and 8, wine was served in goblets of gold, each one different from the other. Note that. It's very eclectic. And the royal wine was abundant in keeping with the king's liberality. By the king's command, each guest was allowed to drink with no restrictions, for the king instructed all the wine stewards to serve each man what he wished. Wow. What a party. Whew. Wine in gold goblets, each one different. We think it's a big deal in our house to have a fun, eclectic mix of coffee mugs, largely family heirlooms or thrift store finds. Xerxes has eclectic golden wine goblets. And the wine, did you catch it? It's royal wine. It's king wine. Be impressed and shake your head. He's out to impress. And the wine, well, it's abundant. No holds barred at this party. The king gives royal command, royal command. The only rule is there are no rules when it comes to drinking. That's what the king says. Whatever goes, drink up. Oh, you want every day of the feast. Then we come to verse 9. Queen Vashti also gave a banquet for the women in the royal palace of King Xerxes. Enter the queen, Queen Vashti. Her name, Vashti, sounds like Persian lingo for beautiful woman. Good chance her name was assigned to her by men. This sets the stage for what's going to happen next. Even her title, queen, carries the same Hebrew root for royalty, kings, kingdoms. Vashti gave her own banquet for all the women, but the story makes a point, do you catch it? The story makes a point of telling us the domain, the kingly house, and all its contents, including the women, all belong to Xerxes. It's all about Xerxes. So, what's Esther's story have to do with our story in 2021? As we kick things off today with this series, and as we move into the rest of it in the next several weeks, I want to encourage you to think on this, and I want to encourage you to grab a set of get-ready concepts. Some get-ready concepts. Here's the first one. Get ready to learn abundantly from the negatives. Get ready to learn abundantly from the negatives. Much of the Bible, characters and events work that way. So many bad examples abound in this story. So, right out of the gate in these opening 9 verses, we should beware of egotistical, powerful, bumbling kings. Beware of, it's all about me, Xerxes' mindset. If we're not careful, if you're not careful, if I'm not careful, we can adopt that mindset and try to bumble our way through life thinking it's all about us. It's all about me. Beware. Beware of materialistic consumerism. Don't let yourself off the hook and say, well, no, I would never do something like Xerxes. Well, maybe not exactly at that level, but if we're not careful, we're all consistently gathering our stuff, and out to impress with our stuff. Beware of materialistic consumerism and a show-off mentality. Beware of unbridled alcohol. Unbridled alcohol. Beware the anything goes, no rules outlook. The bulk of Esther's events are not here for us to emulate. That's so important. Sometimes we have the mistaken notion that, well, if it's in the Bible, I should follow it. And this is a prime example. It's here for you to avoid it. In fact, instead, we're supposed to heart check, and then be in greater awe, humble response to divine working in spite of so much human evil. Heart check, and then be in greater awe, humble response to divine working in spite of so much human evil. So get ready to learn volumes from the negative. Next, get ready each week. And here's what I mean by that. I want to challenge you, encourage you to simply get ready each week. Immerse yourself in this salvation story. Yes, this is a salvation story. This is a good news story. This is a rescue story. This is a redemption story. And we're going to see it unfold. But I want to challenge you to read each week. I want to challenge you. Read each week one time the whole story. Each week. It's a fast-paced story. You can do it. Read each week the whole story and each day from the assigned upcoming section. So in our Church Center app. Many of you have downloaded it. If you haven't yet, Church Center app, it's rich. You then select Manor Church, and there in the app, there's a spot every week for notes, message notes, and with it, there's a Get Ready for Next Week section. And so even this week, you'll see it there. You can read this week each day from chapter 1, verses 10 through 22. Chapter 1, verses 10 through 22, in order to be ready for next week. And we'll be storying from this point all the way through September here in this rich little story. Get ready each week. Get ready to learn volumes so much from the negatives. And next, get ready for what looks like a godless and largely faithless story. Get ready for what looks like a largely faithless and godless story, at least at face value. Notice we're 9 verses in, and there's no mention of God or anything we'd label spiritual. Did you catch that? Not a mention. Get used to it. At best, we'll be able to infer some faith and spirituality in the characters of this story, infer it, but there's a lot to learn about how faithful God is, even when it's not obvious to us that he's present and that he's working. Even when so much can seem faithless, even when so much can seem godless, even when so much can seem like God is being silent. Have you had one of those kinds of seasons? Have you had one of those kinds of seasons? When you're wondering and you're pondering and you're just asking, God, are you there? God, I'm not hearing from you. God. I'll never forget one day when so much in my life seemed discouraging, and not many God sightings, not many God soundings, too much silence. And a friend was kind enough to let me sit with him, and I was unloading on him, and he listened well. And then finally, when I got quiet, he challenged me. He said, "You know, John, I found in my own life, it's important to remember, God is always working, even when I can't see or hear him yet. God is always working, even when you can't see or hear him yet." So get ready in this story for what looks like a godless and largely faithless story, at least at face value, but determine you're going to be all eyes and all ears to how God might just surprise you in this story. And then get ready to be challenged in your own royal work. Get ready to be challenged in your own royal work. Similar royal king lingo first shows up in the biblical story way back in early lines of sacred writ, Genesis 1, 26 through 28. Genesis 1, 26 through 28. "Then God said, 'Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over the livestock and all the wild animals and over all the creatures that move along the ground.' So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them." Note that. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful. Increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." So here was God's intention, original human destiny for royal creative leadership in all of life. 24/7, in all we do, in all we are, in all we think, in all we say, every day, in every way, in every choice, in all our making, in all of our contemplating. It's an overarching mindset, an aim, a strategy of mission, to be on mission with God in all we do, in all we say, in every way, every day. A mindset, an aim, a mission, a strategy for deliberate, purposeful endeavors. It's God's aim that we would lead well, influence wisely, with joyous creativity, not self-centered corruption, not an it's all about me kind of mindset. That we would lead with wisdom and joyous creativity on mission with God every day, like our divine creator, to create good, to do good. We readily realize the devastating effect of sin back there in the garden. We do. The curse. People use and abuse, treat other people and all of the earth like pawns on a chessboard. Esther's story shouts that there's a better way to be human. Esther's story shouts that there's a better way to be human. Such a better way. And it's not the Xerxes way of power, domination, and self-indulgence. Instead, it's crafting what's good, what's beautiful, and what leads to better flourishing. It requires being proactive, intentional, not fatalistic. Too often we see what's on the news, we hear the reports of the fallenness and the cursed condition of our earth, and what do? We shake our heads and we throw our hands in the air and we say, oh, Jesus, come back, and nothing I can do about this till he does. And there's a sense in which that's true. But there's also a great big sense in which that's its own version of fatalism. It's not good enough to just throw your hands in the air and say, nothing I can do. Instead, we are called to be leaders who craft and share what's good. In all we do, in all we say, every day, to live that goodness and to tell that good news. So all of our series, Queens, Kings, and Conspiracies, all the series is going to challenge us to look toward the one true king and his kingdom. The one true king and his kingdom. Jesus' kingdom treatise, the Sermon on the Mountainside, Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 12. I want to invite you to just let these words wash over your heart and mind as we wrap up today. Matthew 5, 1 through 12. It says, now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, catch what he said, blessed. You remember that original creation blessing? He blessed them. Now Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. King Jesus says, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. And King Jesus says, rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way, they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You know, everybody's becoming someone. Every one of us. Every one of us, we're becoming someone. And there's only one better way to become better kings and queens. One better way. And that better way is to get to know King Jesus better. To get to know King Jesus better, the best king of all. Ready yourself with his values and his heart and his kingdom priorities. Determine here at the outset of this series, in all of the negative examples I see in this story, I wanna focus my eyes, I wanna focus my ears, I wanna focus my heart on King Jesus most of all. That's it for the start today. Let's stand together. I'm going to pray for us. I want to invite you as we pray to align your heart with his heart, and we're going to sing out together. King Jesus, thank you so much. You came and did for us what none of us could do for ourselves. You lived such a sinless, perfect life. You worked miracles. You worked with your hands. You did incredible things. You taught amazing values. You taught the way of your kingdom. You pointed us toward eternal life. In these moments, we ask for humble hearts throughout this whole series. Help us with humble hearts. Do a heart check and be in awe. Be in all-out awe of you, King Jesus. We realize how often we fall short. We live our own self-indulgent, Xerxes, it's all about me kind of lives. Lord, tune our hearts back toward you, King Jesus, your values, your passion, your kingdom. Amen.